Wendy, before we introduce Tom Mikitas, just a quick text. We got a lot of texts, some pros, some cons, some in the middle about our discussion over the last half hour about Donald Trump's press conference yesterday. You had mentioned that if you really want to see an interesting take on this, there's a show called Vice or Vice News that runs on HBO. Elle Reeve is the reporter on this particular episode, and what she does is she kind of embeds herself with the white supremacists that work together over the weekend and asks them some what I think are extremely penetrating questions about their motives. Why are you doing this, and what's going on that got you here? I think she does a great job at it, and somebody texted in, Vice News is your source. How reliable? If you watch this, if you just spend the 23 minutes watching it, well, yeah, there are many sources, but since you cited Vice, and I will back you up on it because I watched the exact same episode last night, watch it, because all she does is asks the questions and lets them run with it.
Have an opinion on this.
Not really.
The guy said he thought it was a victory for them this weekend because none of them was killed and
right.
Just one of the other people was killed.
And he said the reason that poor young girl, Heather Heyer, was killed and the reason some of them got injured, and I might be paraphrasing, but something like, you know, they're idiots. They didn't know to move out of the way of a car.
Right. He referred to the people that they were protesting against as animals.
Yep.
Yeah. So I will not only back you up, but I'll double down on this. It is an extremely reliable source. All this woman, Elle Reeve, is doing is asking the leaders of the white supremacist group, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? What happened? And they're taking the rope and hanging themselves.
So, and showing all their guns, the one guy, yeah. The leader of one of the groups, who this started as a bunch of memes, and they just wanted to get out and protest. Donald Trump has said it's because of the Confederate statues, which they said at the beginning, maybe, but they wanted to make a movement. They wanted to take it from the internet. And I got to be honest with you, I'm shocked at all the people that were participating with the tiki torches.
There was a lot.
I mean, that
there were a lot of people there.
It was jaw-dropping to me.
Yeah, no
so,
doubt.
So, terrorism, you be the judge, but we have a terrorism expert on, historian and author and a DePaul professor, Tom Mikitas. Welcome back, Tom. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How about you?
I don't know what to think anymore. I really just don't.
Okay. I can understand that.
Tom, in the past, we've kind of gone over this with you, but now I guess it needs to be redefined again. What does and what does not constitute terrorism?
Well, the key to determining it is, first of all, we generally accept it as violence perpetrated by non-state actors in the service of an ideology, an extremist ideology. And that's why I pull these domestic attacks. Now, certainly they are not premeditated or planned. They're what we fit the pattern, what we call lone wolf. But that doesn't excuse the fact that the extremist organizations spit this vitriol. They create this intense context of ideological hatred. And they know perfectly well that there will be people who will act on this. I mean, if you look at Vanguard America, the group that he had the shield from, they claim he wasn't a member. You know, it's this incredibly racist thing. And then in the bottom, it has this disingenuous disclaimer saying, "Oh, but we do not, you know, advocate lawlessness, et cetera, et cetera." I mean, it's like the Nazis saying, you know, we hate Jews, but on the other hand, we're not in favor. You know, we're not telling you to go out and actually hurt them.
So when they throw out a disclaimer like that, though, what's the purpose of that disclaimer? We all know what's right and what's wrong. So why that disclaimer?
The disclaimer is that they're walking a fine line between openly inciting violence, which might be legally actionable, and creating a climate that encourages it. And I think that's the thing that's going on here. Now, the thing that's also important to recognize, historically, this isn't new. I mean, there was a lot of, in fact, actually, racial violence was much worse in the heyday of the Ku Klux Klan. The unfortunate thing is these attitudes have become closer to the mainstream. They've been legitimized. People have come out in the open with them because they feel like that this has been some way that this has been acceptable as part of legitimate discourse.
My big question to you, Tom, is just because we are for other races and religions, just because we want to welcome that into our country, how in the world does that make us anti-white?
Yeah, Yeah, well, I think that's very, very well said. This is not a rational thing. There's a visceral fear of loss of control and identity. The analysts have said it very well. The issue of the statues is not the statues, except these went up in the 50s, the 60s, not as part of real history, but as part of a reassertion of white dominance in the face of a growing civil rights movement. The real fear is that people have a fear of change, is that if you look at the demographics of America, we're becoming a wonderfully rich rainbow nation, a tapestry of diverse races, religions, ethnicities, and so on. And these people find that somehow just profoundly threatening. And the sad thing is they're looking back to an imaginary when it was better kind of thing. And the bitter irony is that, you know, many of these people, you know, are not particularly well off and so on. But that's due to things that are not related to race or immigration or anything else.
So are they preyed upon a little bit because of that? I mean, I know there's a growing movement online to recruit people who are exactly what you described, yeah, a little bit on the downside so that somebody sees an in to get to them. That's by design, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm actually working on a new terrorism book, and a big part of it's going to be looking at this issue of radicalization. And I'm struck by how similar the way these people recruit and the way ISIS recruits is. But in both cases, what you construct is what's called a grievance narrative. And that narrative is cobbled together with some real unhappiness and a perceived imaginary scapegoated other. And then you create with it an empowerment narrative. One, you're being persecuted. And two, you can do something about it. Now, the good thing is 90% of the people who buy into either or both of those narratives really never do engage in violence, but it doesn't matter. It creates the environment in which just enough of them actually do. So, and the thing is that the internet is a game changer, because on the one hand, it both isolates and connects you. It isolates you from the immediate reality around you. And on the other hand, it creates a virtual community of people who tell you your views are really not extreme, they're mainstream. And that's a particularly pernicious thing.
I, first of all, want to say this completely truthful. I do not agree with President Trump's statement on both sides are to blame. I will, however, say that, and we spoke about this a little earlier, I did see the protesters getting more violent, flipping off the white nationalists. But then I try to think, if these white nationalists were marching down my street with tiki torches that they grabbed from someone's backyard, I would be trying to defend my turf, and you mentioned it yourself, they are kind of trying to incite the violence. They know very well that's going to happen.
Right. And I think, you know, a good friend of mine, I mean, I think we still have a good friend was actually there demonstrating peacefully. And she said, this is anecdotal, but I think it's got some validity to it, that large groups of people from both sides were not from Charlottesville. But they came in. Now, when I say both sides, let me be really clear here. There is no, equivalency between Nazis and anybody else. Neo-Nazis, fascists, racism, anti-Semites. It was a polyglot group, but they were all hate mongers. There no way is those who countered them. But I don't find it hard to believe that in a heightened vitriolic environment of this kind of thing, that there would be scuffles and clashes and so on. On the other hand, they didn't go there with the intent of engaging in violence. When the other people show up with shields and guns and things like that, that is an intentionally threat posturing approach.
Yep.
And nobody who is there to protest the alt-right gathering, the Unite the Right gathering, killed anybody.
Tom Mikaitis is our guest, historian, author, teacher over at DePaul University, professor at DePaul University. He has several books out, The Iraq War Encyclopedia, The New Terrorism, Myths and the Reality, and many more. He's working on another one. If you have any questions or comments, we're easy to reach. We're at 312-981-7200. More in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Tom Mikaitis is our guest. We've had Tom on before. Always interesting to talk to him, a DePaul professor, terrorism expert, author of several books, including The Iraq War Encyclopedia, The New Terrorism, Myths, and the Reality. Do we have a title yet for the new book, Tom?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, understanding terrorism, terrorists, and terrorist organizations, understanding the threat. That's kind of the working title.
Not available yet, though. Right?
No, I had to write it first.
All right. I see how you work. All right.
Yeah, it's in process.
All right.
All right. 312-981-7200. Joe has a question for you. Professor Tom Mikaitis on the line with us. Joe, what's your question?
Hi. Well, I've been in the military, and many of my family members before me have been in the military. I just find it hard to believe that this country will go and fight a war to eradicate Nazism and oppression against people of the countries, or even threats against the United States. But they allow it to march down our streets and not do a thing about it. I mean, it's the people that are causing all this trouble didn't even live in Charlottesville. And they were there for one purpose, was to instigate trouble with the people they knew were going to turn out to try to stop them. But I just can't believe we would let a lot of people die for this country to stop something that they're allowing to breed here.
Tom, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's very well said, and thank you for your comments, Joe. I think that the struggle is that I think people, one of the things that those people died for in World War II was the freedoms that we all hold, and I think it's a very delicate balance over freedom of expression and the right of the rest of us to be in a secure, safe environment. I wrote a piece in the Huffington Post over the weekend on this, and I think it's really time to have a serious conversation whether hate speech is truly covered by the First Amendment guarantee of free speech. Because at the time that was written, there was no internet. In the old days, there were filters in place. You know, a reputable publisher was not going to publish these things. Even the local newspaper required your letter to the editor to be articulate, factual, and respectful. Even if you disagreed with people, that was okay. This is a game changer. There are absolutely no filters now, and it becomes possible to just create this very, very, you know, supercharged kind of environment. But I think the response to this has been very positive. There have been peaceful responses. I think the move to take down this horrible iconography of secession and slavery, these statues, is actually moving. And I think there's something to celebrate here. These are southern cities, southern communities choosing to do this on their own. This is not a bunch of northern liberals running down to the south and tearing down the statues. So I think there are the response to this and the outrage has proven to be a pretty, you know, pretty positive thing.
Is there a better way to go about removing these icons, like trying to start a petition and do it instead of vandalizing it?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Charlottesville, in fact, is doing. In fact, the only thing that's slowing it up is a lawsuit that will probably fail, saying, well, you don't have the right to do this. Well, sure they do. The city council has a right to take down the statue, so it's going to come down. Others have come down in other places in the United States. There's absolutely no question that doing it the right way, the legal way, et cetera, is the appropriate response, just as peaceful protest is the appropriate response to these kinds of movements. I suggested, I think, if this Labor Day, next to our flags, we put up a sign like hate has no home here, or, you know, no matter where you're from, you're my neighbor. I mean, that's the kind of response that can, and I tried to buy that sign, by the way, and you can't because it's so far back ordered they can't possibly keep up.
Wow.
So I think you're really seeing a really grassroots counter response saying these individuals do not speak for us.
Tom, did you live in or around Chicago in the 1970s?
No. I just heard a report this morning, though. I was familiar. I was actually a grad student in Madison when the whole neo-Nazi movement and the attempted march through Skokie was going on.
Yeah.
But of course, Madison is one of the most diverse cities even at that time. So yeah, I mean, but again, you know, that's also a thing to celebrate. You know, it was very much linked into this fear of integration, this fear of change, And it is essentially in that community pretty much evaporated. Chicago still has issues with segregation and still has issues with race and division and all kinds of stuff like that. But despite the work I do, or maybe because of it, I'm always a glass half full sort of person.
All right. Well, that brings me to the big question. Are we truly moving backwards?
No, I don't. I really don't think we are. It's very interesting. People don't realize in the study of conflict and change that I've done in, you know, over 30 some years, I've noticed something that others have commented on, that often things are most intense and sometimes most violent just on the eve of change. One of the bloodiest years in South Africa was the last year of apartheid. And I think that's something what you're seeing. This is not nearly that extent, but I think what you're seeing is that I'm seeing this in some ways as a last gasp of this fear of change. And the real issue, as I said, going back to my earlier comment, people can protest and advocate for white supremacy, et cetera. They cannot change the underlying demographic of America, which is the diversification, the intermarriage, the wonderful blending of humanity that is making us the strong nation we are. They can't do anything about that. That's not reversible.
Why can't you be our president?
Come on, Tom, just be our president. Come on.
I hate meetings. I'm an academic.
All right.
I can't stand committees. I can't stand meetings, you know. No, believe me, you don't want an academic president. You want a practical, pragmatic, not a theoretician.
I have to admit, you make me feel more hopeful after speaking to you. Hasn't he helped a little, Bill?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit. It's been, as you know, Tom, it's been a rough couple of days.
Yeah, I share that. I'm heartsick about what happened. It has been a rough couple of days. But maybe what gives me hope is being a historian, because we take the long view of things.
I'll tell you how rough it's been, Tom. This is how rough it's been.
Yeah.
When Wendy and I talked about having you on, our goal was to talk about North Korea.
Yep.
And that didn't even come up. That's how rough the last
couple
of days have been.
So we'll get you next week to talk about should we be fearful of that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm always available to talk about cheerful and interesting things.
Right? All right, good.
Well, it looks like we should have you out every week then.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
We'll keep you on our power dial. Tom, thank
you
so much. We really appreciate it. It's Tom Mikaitis, historian and author, all kinds of books, some of them not even written yet. The Iraq War Encyclopedia, The New Terrorism Myths and Reality, Iraq and the Challenges of the Counterinsurgency, and Osama Bin Laden, a biography. Thanks so much, Tom. Have a good rest of the week.
You too. Anytime.
All right. Take care.
All right. We have to talk to him next week about North Korea now, because that is really what our topic was supposed to be.
I know.
Because God knows what's going to happen over there.
Yeah, I know. All right. We'll take a quick break. We have news next. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.